The way Holsey and I decided to do this is that she was going to talk about atmospheric, which is the background, and I was going to talk about the charm decay in slow jet supernova as the origin of the ice cube ultra high energy neutrino balance. So I just have a couple of slides really here, but the main thing is you saw probably some of you were here. I actually watched all the talks at home. Some of you were here. I know what you were doing while you were attending talks. But 2 weeks ago, I think that there were two talks that they showed ice cube data. I think that it was Sergio showed the data and somebody else also. So ice cube is seeing some unusual access events. Is this some pointer or some placer? So here's the data that you saw 2 weeks ago. This is the ice cube data right here with the error bars. And to me, it's extremely interesting. It's the first time that ice cube, and I'm old enough to remember when ice cube was, when Amanda didn't even exist, and there were lots of people who were doubting it will ever be able to do anything. But look at this interesting data. First of all, they're measuring atmospheric neutrinos, which is what Holsey was talking about, a lot of interesting physics there. But they're seeing an axis here. So if you go above about 30 TV all the way to 2 PV, they're seeing these events above. This is the background. So this is what Holsey was talking about. This purple thing here, right here, if you see the purple, is the meson decay. That's the background, the atmospheric one. And they actually take from our paper, and that's the one that she showed in one of her plots. And so, and this is pions and chaos. So you see they cross around here, roughly. But if you go beyond that, there's really a lot of access. It's about 5.7 sigma, in fact, 37 events above 30 PV, up to 2 PV. But then there is nothing beyond 2 PV. So what IceCube has done is they have fitted this data with one of the E-squared, which is this dotted one here. That will be what one would naively expect, and you will see actually what's going on here, naively expect from the astrophysical source, which is powered by the Fermi shock acceleration. But they also fitted a little bit steeper. This is e^-2.3 right here, this gray one. So they have two fits here. They're just fits with data. But they're not seeing anything beyond 2 PV. That's the main thing. So what did we do? We looked at this and got excited about it, and we said, well, this looks interesting. Could it be possibly that there is a charm decay coming from specific type of sources, which I will explain in a minute, that could give this kind of behavior, this axis here, this kind of behavior, but such that actually it cuts off at few PV? And the answer is yes. Actually, we looked a few years before this data, we looked at this particular type of source. And I'm just going to show that, so this is different type of cosmic accelerators that one can accelerate. So how do you get these astrophysical sources to produce neutrinos? They have to accelerate protons through the Fermi shock acceleration, then they interact with the ambient protons and photons, they produce pions, and then pions decay into neutrinos. That's a standard way. So this would be active galactic nuclei, cosmic ray, or this is cosmogenic. But the specific source that I want to focus on is this one. And that is the, this is so-called slow jet supernova model due to the Razaki, Mazzaris, and Waxman in 2004. And in this case, what happens actually, this is quite interesting, is this particular source has a jet, and of course it accelerates particles inside this jet through the Fermi shock acceleration, but this jet never makes it out. The Lorentz factor is very small. So this is so-called choke jets. So the only thing that could come out is neutrino out of this. It never breaks the stellar envelope here. So the only thing you can produce is actually neutrinos in this. Okay, so what I wanted to do is talk about what happens now with these particular sources and how they produce neutrinos and how do you get this particular spectrum. So some arrays these collaborators. I know, but it's true. And I just wanted to say Atri Bhattacharya is a postdoc working with me and Holsey, and he's an excellent person. If you have a job, remember that. So the slow jet supernova, actually the specification for those, what are the properties? The only visible, as I said, are neutrinos. the interactions are proton-proton and proton-photon. But that will depend on the density of these particles inside the jet, right? It will depend which one is going to be the dominant one. This one is not going to produce any charged mesons. It's going to produce pions and kaons, but this one will. So the question is actually, for these particular models, do you have enough density to produce, to have peak interaction produce the meson? And the answer is yes. So what we're going to be looking at is V0, V0 bar, and V plus minus, and their decay. So what happens is exactly what Halsey was talking about, exactly the same thing here. At very high energies, pions and kaons lose their energy, so they're really steeper flux. You just cannot, even for these sources, you just cannot get enough of these neutrinos. But the mesons, if you produce enough of them, they're going to have that kind of a spectrum that I showed you there. So I should go to the first thing, actually, be looking at the, because this is going to be my last thing as well. So it's that kind of spectrum. But there are some interesting features here, and that is, first of all, as Halsey was talking about, we're looking at the protons. So protons get accelerated in these inside the Fermi-Shock acceleration, and that type of acceleration is 1/e². That's the typical, you know, first order Fermi-Shock acceleration. However, what's happening with the protons inside, before they actually interact, they could actually lose their energy. And you don't accelerate them to very high energy. So there is a cutoff, that's very important. There is a cutoff in energy, how high you can accelerate protons in these kind of sources. Okay, so the proton flux, or energy spectrum, I should call it, has a cutoff. Some energy you just will not be producing them anymore. And the, so that's going to play a major role there. That's exactly where that cutoff there at QPV comes from. It comes from the proton not being able to accelerate beyond certain energy, which means that you will not be able to produce the mesons. They carry part of the energy from the proton, and therefore you're going to be cutting it off at QPV. So the uncertainties that are involved in all of this, this is going to be important, are, of course, QCD that Halsey was talking about, QCD uncertainties in mass of the charm, scales, both normalization and fragmentation, and parton distribution functions. These are going to be QCD uncertainties, which are, no matter what you do, you always have these uncertainties. So in addition to that, there's going to be astrophysical uncertainties. Because these things are not observed. You know, you can't observe them. So they're just modeled by Gaudazzi, Mazzaros, and Maxwell.
What's the advantage of the slow jet versus just a GRB jet? Like, why do you invoke a non-seeing thing when you have GRB jets? They can also do the particle acceleration.
Sure, but they would not give anything like this. And the ice keepers will prove that GRBs cannot be source of this.
Okay, so the other one is, okay. I'm not, the slow jet one is, I'm not quite sure how that, I mean, so I don't think that many people believe they even happened, so then you're invoking something.
But the only way that you would know is actually to observe neutrinos.
No, because they should, if you have a slow jet, you will still get a transient out of it. There's no way I can drive something that is even close to relativistic and not get a burst out of the star. The star doesn't have much binding energy, so
sure.
Something will come out. So there should be some transient, but it could be that they're so rare that you never see them. But we actually do think we see, you know, what we call failed GRBs. So this is not a failed GRB, this is a really failed GRB, which can't happen on an energetics. So
yeah, the difference between GRB and this is really this is the slow, you know, moving, so it's Lorentz factor is very low. The GRB is Lorentz factor.
Do you need a low Lorentz factor?
Yes, we do. There's no way that you can do this. So you need it to be slow. Now, would one be able to see these bursts as they come, one burst, or, you know, something like that? The answer is yes, and that one could look at individual sources, but how often something like that would happen? And neutrino bursts. And what I'm going to show you is that the diffuse flux of these kind of sources actually is compatible with what ice cream has observed.
Okay.
What have you assumed for having
I'm just coming to that. Can I? Okay, so there will be some uncertainty. Okay, I'm coming to that in just a second. Okay. So what are we assuming exactly inside? So the number, I'm going to have to erase this. So the number density of electrons is equal to the number density of protons, and gamma is between 3 and 10. This is all approximate. Jet angle is, let's call it theta j, is 1 over gamma j. And the value for this that we take, this is all approximate, is of the order of 10 to the 20 per centimeter cubed. There's a whole range, of course, there's uncertainty there. And the number of photons, roughly 10 to the 24. These are the values. Again, this is the model Rezaki, Paxman, and Zarek built up, and you know, they wrote PRL and they wrote other papers. So they have very good description. You know, they derived this from the luminosity and from the Lorentz factor. And the magnetic field that they assume. So there are all these things. But of course, there is.
Here, these people do exactly the same thing.
Exactly the same. Yes, just different numbers. That's right. Yes. Yes, you're right. Okay, so there are some uncertainties here. You can keep this on the side. And the proton flux then, which is cut off, looks something like e to the minus 2, but then there is a cutoff, which is something like e to the minus e prime over e max. So to find the maximum energy that protons can reach, this when they accelerate it, is you have to compare acceleration time with all the cooling times of the protons, and that's how you find it. I know you can't read it. That's what my students.
No, I'm thinking why do you go prime?
In the jet frame. This is all the jet frame. I'm going to boost it down to the other frame. Sorry. So to find which maximum energy, again, one has to compare the times, you know, the times, proton cooling times. So if somebody tells you that you can go on with that 1 over e squared type of thing indefinitely, they're not telling the truth. Because protons, you have to take into account that the proton can interact in these interaction things. And you have to see where, which energy actually acceleration, which is Fermi shock acceleration, you know what that looks like. Where does it cross with the cooling times? And it's going to be some number, whatever it is. And beyond that, you know, you slowly don't have any more protons accelerated. So proton cooling times. And as those of us who are a little bit older and who have been working on hadronic interactions, and I see some in the audience, hadronic interactions have large cross-section, therefore this cooling, you know, it's just not going to accelerate at very high energies. So there's hadronic cooling. The cross section, of course, PP cross section is large. It's 10 to the minus 26 centimeters squared. Radiative processes. That's inverse Compton scattering, for example. And P gamma, of course, can also be, protons can interact with these photons here as well. And that's also how they lose. So P gamma production as well. And then that has to be compared with acceleration time. So we have to see where they cross. And maybe I have a plot of that. Let me just see real quick, because I can't draw these kind of things. Okay, so this is the one for the proton. So you can see here, so this is acceleration time, the one which is the which is just straight with energy, linear with energy. This is the acceleration one. These are all the cooling times. This is PP interactions, P gamma, and radiative. And you see they cross here at few times to the 5 times to the 5. So that's when it's going to stop losing energy. It's just not going to accelerate beyond that. So this is the maximum energy, 5 times 10 to the 5.
What magnetic field do you have there?
Magnetic field is 10 to the 9. Gauss.
Minus 9.
So these are the typical, you know, values for these kind of sources. And you can see that the main thing is that you really cannot accelerate protons beyond some energy. They're just, you have to have this cutoff. So that's going to propagate. Because remember how you are going to look now for production of the D mesons. These, you're going to need this flux to fold it with the production of PP going to a charm. Therefore, this is going to give you a cutoff, these Z moments that Holzig was showing you before, whereas the Z moment here, here it is. So you see this contains the proton flux here. So Z moments are going to reflect the cutoff in energy of the of this proton. Okay, so I think I probably have, and in addition to that, once you produce so you have PP interaction, you're producing charm. Charm then, through fragmentation, gives the...
Expect anything at lower energies if such sources are responsible.